Live from Hollywood, California, it's The Rick Savage Show.
It is The Rick Savage Show. I'm your host, Rick Savage. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning back in. Or if it's your first time, thanks for checking out the podcast. I appreciate it. Couple quick things. We're going to start doing this on Tuesdays because a lot of great podcasts come out on Mondays and a lot of great podcasts come out on Fridays. So I figure Tuesday will be like, all right, you listen to Pod Save America, you listen to Chris D'Elia, you listen to Bad Friends, and then now you can listen to this on a Tuesday, hopefully. One big shout out to Jordan, who decided to tweet about the podcast and said, this guy is a good dude and his podcast is good. And so, Jordan, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. If you're listening and you like this, just send the link to a friend or tweet about it. That's all I'm asking. My guest today is Carl Cherry. Carl is the head of urban music for Spotify. I've known Carl for a long, long time. We talk about hip-hop, talk about music, talk about the culture. We wonder if I'm too old for the current rap music, and maybe I'm not. Little spoiler, maybe I'm not. I just have to be a little more selective in what I'm listening to. So I think you'll really enjoy this conversation, even if you're not the biggest hip-hop fan in the world. A lot of insights into, you know, someone like Carl, who, if you ever wonder who the people are that pick the music on the playlists on Spotify and all those services, it's the people like Carl. So I think you'll enjoy it. Have a listen. And then tweet me or tweet your friends or whatever, and we'll be back here next Tuesday. Okay, here is my conversation with Carl Cherry. Have a good week. Talk to you later. Bye.
Yo.
Carl Cherry.
What up, man?
What's up, man? How are you?
Chilling.
So I want to talk a little bit about the culture of hip-hop.
Yes.
And what that means, right? And, yep. You know, I've been kind of lucky to jump around and work in different music genres. I worked at rock radio stations, and my first couple jobs when I was a kid was kind of more in like the punk rock side of things, and always loved hip hop and grew up with it. But I got actually my first ever on-air radio job was at a country station. So I even got like a little taste of country music. Yeah. So I've seen it. I've seen different sides of it. Right. And I would say every genre kind of has a culture. If you're a punk rock kid, it's maybe the way you dress. Obviously Nashville has a culture around country music, but it's not the same. And I'm wondering if you have ever thought about why that is, why with the culture of hip hop, it's, you know, constant debates and constant discussions. And you host a podcast called The Rat Pack, and that's kind of the basis is talking about the culture and everything that's happening. And I don't think in Nashville they're having arguments over, you know, whose first album was better, Brad Paisley or Kenny Chesney. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So why do you think that is specifically to the hip hop culture?
I mean, I think it's the only culture that's attached outside of Latin music. It's the only culture that's attached to a specific ethnic group. I mean, obviously, you can make a generalization and say that most of the others are white, but when we talk about the culture, it's essentially a reflection. Hip hop culture is essentially a reflection of Black interests. Mm-hmm. So anything that that Black youth is interested in is part of the culture. So that's why it's the music, it's fashion, it's video games, it's sports, specifically basketball, which is a lot more intertwined than other sports.
Yeah.
A little bit of politics. And that's what we do in general. Like, and I think that comes in play with the hip hop generation specifically. I can't speak to what was happening in the 70s or the 60s and whether or not people were really talking about Miles Davis versus Bird or whatever.
Right.
But our generation has just been at the root of it. It's just something we do. It's interesting. Like, just talking to you right now, like, I'm like, man, me and Rick could have had this conversation at the Cubes. Like, this is what we do.
Right.
Like, that's what's fun about the Rat Pack. We're having all these conversations that we've been having all our lives, basically. So I think the cleanest way to say it is that it's because of the people that make up the culture. It's one of the things that we do on a daily basis. Even when you look at the appetite for new music, which is at the center of why hip hop is so big in streaming. Like, we constantly look for new stuff and there's a pride attached to it. Like, okay, I'm first. In hip hop, if you're not first, ahead of the curve, or early, you're late.
Yeah.
That doesn't apply to any other genre. It's not as critical.
Right.
And there's also a pride attached to, like, well, I was here first. I put you on. How many times do we get into light arguments with our friends because when somebody blows up, they try to take credit for being the person that told us about it? Like, yo, I put you on the Nas. Like, nah, you didn't. I already knew about it. Whatever.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's all these little traits that are so specific. Even when it comes to beef, it's connected to, like, to some extent, the crabs in a barrel mentality. Like, it's just like, yo, not there's room for everyone, but when we have competitive tension, it spirals in a different way. You know, I was listening to Bill Simmons' Pearl Jam podcast, and he was talking to Eddie Vedder. And, you know, I remember hearing stories about Guns N' Roses and Nirvana. Like, they had Axl and Kurt Cobain had beef.
Sure.
And I think with them, they carried it in, like, a somewhat of a hip hop way, but I don't remember, like, this record's being part of it. So there's just so many little characteristics of the culture that are unique. And also, I would say, I think hip hop is the only ecosystem where the culture is the engine that drives the music. I don't know that anyone else has that, where something happens culturally and it helps amplify what's happening musically.
Yeah, I mean, definitely not in rock music. Definitely not in country music. Like you said, Latin, maybe. I don't know. It's just it's a different experience, I think, that people are reporting on. You know what I mean? It's just I just don't think it happens anywhere else.
Social media is a perfect example, right? We just talked about how the internet hasn't failed us during this time, right?
Yeah.
If you look at the most followed people on social media, they're not all rappers. They're not all part of the culture. But no one takes advantage of social media as a marketing lever like hip-hop culture. Like, how many examples do we have of songs that have taken off as a result of a challenge in a pop space or in a country space? It doesn't really happen. Why not? It just doesn't lend itself to those type of music in those cultures. For some reason, it feels exclusive to hip hop, which is interesting because really we black and brown, we share that culture as well. Like, it's not just black folks. It's like, right. There's a lot of Latinos have been part of it since the beginning. And a lot of the characteristics between Latin and hip hop are there. But for some reason you don't hear a Ozuna, a Bad Bunny challenge either.
Right. Do you think that you talk about hip hop culture? And the history of hip hop has always been the underdog or the struggle. But now that, I mean, mainstream music, the top songs on Spotify, every commercial has a hip hop music bed or an artist or a song, or like, it's so mainstream now. Do you think that affects the culture that it's you're not really the underdog as far as the music industry? It's the biggest genre on every streaming chart every time you open it.
Well, the people that make up the culture are still underdogs, you know, where they come from, that their socioeconomic situations. So I think that's that those neighborhoods, they're still the breeding grounds, right? The hottest artist of 2020 so far has been Roddy Ricch. He's from Compton. Buzzing all the bells out the box. I just hit a lick with the box. Had to put the stick in the box. The whole damn field, I'ma get lazy. I got the mojo deals, we been trapping like the 80s. Right. That's like one of the most deepest talent pools in hip-hop history. You want to look at Kendrick Lamar and Dr. Dre, arguably the greatest producer of all time, one of the most influential artists of all time, come from Compton. So I think they still come from underground situations, even though the genre is mainstream. So I don't think that changed. But I do think what's happening because of hip hop being so mainstream is that the idea of the culture and those rules, those set of regulations that you used to have to abide by, it's becoming harder and harder to uphold them. And that's why you have people behind the scenes slowly but surely, I'm not going to say remove themselves, but they just, they lose a little bit of passion, or they feel like less engaged, because the culture as it is now isn't exactly the same culture they fell in love with.
Yeah.
I would say that it's harder and harder to regulate and uphold the culture in the way it's meant to be now, because it's mainstream. You could still, it still works. Mm. And I think one of the reasons is because I don't believe in gatekeepers, because I think the power is in the hands of the people now.
Yeah.
But the people who are influential, whether you're talking about an Elliot Wilson, whoever, those people are still from a certain era. So they still have, even though they've adapted to the climate and the times and they've evolved, they still have their idea of what the culture is still rooted in what the origins are. So
right.
I think because of that, we're able to preserve it. What's going to be interesting is what's going to happen in 20 years.
Yeah.
What's going to happen when the kids that are coming up in this era are the OGs. That's when it's going to be interesting to see where the culture goes.
Do you think that we're just old? You know what I mean? Like, how many babies are there right now? There's Baby and Dub Baby and Lil Baby and
Sada Baby.
I mean, come on. And you
Baby
know,
King.
I try, I'll listen, I'll go through the top tracks, and it just doesn't hit me like it used to. And I don't want to be the old guy that's like, there's no bars here, the production is thin. Like, I don't want to be that guy. I remember when I got like a Run DMC tape, and it was Raising Hell, so it must have been 84. I don't know, 86 maybe. I was probably 6 years old when I got it. You know, and my parents didn't understand it. And my mom, like, you can't understand what they're saying. And, you know, all those cliches that you think about, like, the music that we grew up with. Now I'm afraid that I'm saying the same thing about whatever SoundCloud rapper blows up or whatever artist is on the charts right now. Am I old, or is that true?
I think that happens eventually, right? And by the way, when I was talking about like the culture, I was more talking about the outside interests, people who now want a hand in what's happening in hip hop to profit off of it,
yeah,
but don't really understand how it works.
Right.
When we talk about the music specifically, I do think that at a certain point, you just don't connect with the music the same way you connected with the music that you came of age with.
Yeah.
I was listening to Mobb Deep this weekend because the infamous 25th anniversary is coming up.
Oh, okay.
April 25th, I think. And I'm listening and I'm like, this is 25 years old, but it just, and I take pride in like not being like, I don't subscribe to like older is better.
Right.
Like some of this shit that came before is better. And guess what? Some of the shit that came after is also better.
Yeah.
But something like Mobb Deep, I listened to the infamous and I'm like, oh my God, the production is aged beautifully. Like it's incredible.
Yeah. Tight situation now. Take these words home and think it through. Or the next rhyme I write might be about you. Sunday show. Cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. They shook. Cause ain't no such things as halfway crooks. Scared to death and scared to look. Living the life that is diamonds and guns. There's numerous ways you could choose to earn funds. I think one of the advantages that I have in curating now is that I really do have an appreciation for the young shit.
So it doesn't hit me in the same. I don't connect with it, but I understand it. One of the reasons I understand it is because I'm outside. I'm in the same places where the people who are making this music are.
Mm-hmm.
It hits you a little different when you can witness it firsthand. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be part of it. Like, you know, I joked recently that when, I don't know if you heard about this guy, 645 AR.
No. Please tell me about 645 AR.
Bro, he sounds basically like Alvin and the Chipmunks. Like,
great.
It's this dude from the Bronx. Academics posted him like a couple weeks ago, and I remember I texted him like, "Yo, are you serious?
Like, is this an April Fool's joke?"
Right? Yeah, because the caption was to the effect of like, "Yo, this is the hottest shit." Da-da-da. So I text Ack like, "Yo, Ack, you trolling or not?" And he only responded with LOL. Mm. Couple weeks later, somebody at my job at Spotify hits me with the link. And they're like, "Yo, you heard this shit?" And I'm like, "Yes, I did." And like, and then it was on the viral charts. So
yeah,
you know what's interesting with a lot of the shit that ends up taking off? It really begins as people poking fun at it. Yeah. There's a comedic element to it, and then out of nowhere, it's stuck in your head, and then you like it. I think that's what happened with Rumor to a certain extent.
Yeah,
like you saw those guys in this. You saw the guy, because Rumor's one person, with the ski mask, and it was so jarring. It was like, what the fuck is going on? And then, initially, you just laughed.
Yeah.
And then, a couple of notes in, you were like, wait, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you remember, like, Jay-Z, I think when he got inducted, I think in the Songwriters Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, mm-hmm. and he shouted out like the new generation, like he shouted out all these people on Instagram, on Twitter, and he shouted out everyone from people that came before him, some of his peers, and some of the new kids who were doing it. So I think there's a way to cherish your era, but also appreciate what comes after it.
Yeah, I think you're right. Whether it's you're looking at something and it's comical or it just sounds drastically different. When you were talking about, what's the guy's name?
645 AR.
Amazing. I thought about Tekashi 6ix9ine. When I first heard Tekashi, I was like, this isn't real. Like, this is so over the top and so ridiculous. And then after a couple listens, I was like, I get it. I understand why kids are losing their minds to this. Or even Cardi. Like, when Cardi first came out, I was like, I can't take her serious, and now she's the biggest artist in the world.
Yeah, I remember when Gummo was out.
Yeah,
at first, I was supporting it just because there was demand for it.
Yeah,
and it's interesting also how you can process information like or music now because there's so much. I find that I'm not always able to be present at the right time because there's so much coming at you. And I remember hearing Gummo and I was like a little dismissive, quite frankly. And
sure.
Even though I supported it, cause I was like, well, this guy sounds like Fredro Starr, mm-hmm. like, or whatever. But then I remember hearing it months later and being like, wait, this is kind of hard. Like there was just something, I don't know if I heard it in a different state or whatever, but I was like, wait, I'm hearing it differently now. From down, you silly off. Hit a stay 50 bin or 100. Spin it through your block like a pop shovel.
Shoot at me, I'm shooting back. I'm getting bucket. I don't know how you keep track. I was thinking about, like, imagine being, I guess the equivalent to your job at Spotify would be a program director at a huge radio station in 1997 or something, right? Imagine if you got like three new records a week to listen to and how easy and different your job would be if you had to just, you know, shuffle through maybe half a dozen new songs a week. How many new records are you listening to a week on an average week?
Man, I lost count, man.
Yeah.
I lost count. I want to say in the hundreds, but... but that's not accurate. But think about it, right? So on a week-to-week basis, I'll definitely listen to several albums. Mm-hmm. You gotta figure out that those albums all have at least 10 plus songs. There could be weeks where I listen to over 100 for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yo, it's tough because I also started like, I also remember a time where I was able to consume everything and be informed about everything.
Sure.
Right. And I think we're similar. We're generally informed and we pride ourselves in that. And you get into this space where it's literally impossible to track everything. So there was a time where I kind of struggled with it because I was like, yo, somebody would bring up something like, yo, you heard about this? And I was like, nope.
Yeah.
Because it's too much. But yeah, the guy in 1997, shit, his job was, I say this respectfully. I'm not going to say his job was easier.
Of course.
But the volume is night and day. It's not even funny.
Yeah. Well, so then that brings the obvious question. Is there too much music and has it watered down the quality of what's coming out right now?
I think people tend to say the quality is watered down. What I'll say is that there's more music to sift through. So, I mean, let's be real, right? Like, I can't think of, I can't look at the last 10 years and say there's as much quality as there used to be.
Right.
The numbers are just going to prove me otherwise. If you look at the number of classics in every genre, not just hip hop, that have come out before the 2010s, there's just a lot more classic songs, classic albums that have come out. But there's still a lot of quality. I think there's just like so much to go through. I think people, were accustomed to like just getting served up things that they were familiar with or liked. And now maybe with the change of mediums, you know, as you get older, people also have to adjust how they listen to music. So they end up not knowing where to find it or how to find it. I think that happens a lot. Like, I feel like, you know, a lot of these guys from like the 80s and 90s that now think hip hop sucks, if they just knew how to find like guys that were inspired by the guys they liked, they would like the music.
Yeah.
In some cases, because I do think there's always like this weird generational bias. Like, I'll talk to dudes who, you know, think Kendrick and Cole are just cool just because they subscribe to like older, better.
Sure.
That you know, that mentality.
That makes sense. I mean, I remember I was watching an interview with Dave Grohl recently, and it was like on some terrible rock morning show, some radio show. And they asked him, you know, like, is rock music dead? And where are all the good bands? And he's like, if you're not putting in the effort to find it, I don't know what to tell you, because it's there. Like, you might have to work a little bit harder because there's more of it, but it's there. And I think that's the same for hip hop. It's there if you look for it. And that's on the user, you know?
I agree. The other thing is, it's interesting to see how things age, right? Like, I used to be a big cannabis fan.
Yeah.
Okay, so think about those old, I've always thought about, and I don't know how to do it, but it would be interesting to do a study on hip-hop subject matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's things that'll never change. You're going to talk about the struggle. You're going to talk about coming of age. You're going to party. You're going to talk about girls. But then there's like these lanes that come and go. Mm. And, you know, rap, there used to be a lot of rapping about being better than other people. You don't really hear that anymore.
Right.
And then there was this era where the way you showed the other rapper that you were better than him was by basically rapping on some superhero shit and coming up with these similes and like comparisons that are literally impossible.
Yeah.
And when you hear that, like in 2020, it sounds absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, think about, right? Like, and listen, I hope cannabis doesn't listen to your podcast.
Yeah. I think you're safe. I think you're good.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
But I remember like being like, oh my God, this guy's incredible. And he was like revered as like, you know, this super lyricist that was like just incredible. And then you listen to, you know, on a metaphysical level, I can make you burst into flames just by looking at a picture of you. What? Think about how ridiculous that sounds. At the time, it sounded It's the lyrical miracle shit. It's
My IQ number has 6 zeros behind it. I possess the power to sleep with open eyelids. On a metaphysical level, I make you burst into flame just by looking at a picture of you. In fact, whenever I put the mask to the Buddha, my brain cells become parallel to a computer.
So here's one for you. I'm the first to admit that I was aware of Nipsey before he passed, but I was not a fan. I didn't recreationally listen to Nipsey. And then I just gave it more of a chance, I guess, after everyone was talking about him so much and how important he was. And now I kind of have that regret of like, oh wow, I really missed out on a special artist, I think. In that lane, I feel like Nipsey is a bridge of someone in my older demographic that can appreciate his style and everything. It feels like a little bit of a bridge to maybe the 90s. Who is another artist like that that I should be aware of? Or give me a couple artists that it's like, okay, if that's your lane, but a current artist, who should I be into?
One other good example, because what's remarkable about Nipsey, he first gained notoriety around like 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And his debut album came out like almost a decade later.
Wow.
And so for him to have, you know, all these different moments where like he would have a moment and then, I'm not going to use the word fade, but...
just be quiet for a while.
Yeah, he would be quiet for a while. Like, and you know, you had another moment with the Proud to Pay campaign. And every time you had a moment, you were like, oh, is that when he's going to take off? You know, if you want to go all the way back, like Nipsey has a record with Drake.
Yeah.
Like that. This is how hot this guy was. But the thing that was impressive to me was like, wow, like all this time, like all with hip hop changing so many times since you first gained notoriety, you figured out a way to put out a project that is amazing. Mm. Like you didn't lose a step.
Yeah.
And you arguably got better over time. So the other person I think kind of did something similar recently is Freddie Gibbs.
Yeah.
The Freddie Gibbs and Madlib project. I mean, to me, it's some of the best rapping of Gibbs's career.
Chopping up the change with cocaine in my microwave. Made it through my whole month with my lights out. I seen brighter day. Once this shit get neat, how boy you living, you die by this game. Homeboy just caught HIV, he living, he die by this soul. Have we ever hit the same bitch?
And you have somebody who's been around over a decade who is arguably still getting better. That's not easy to do. You look at all the greats. I don't know how many of them are able to come out with their best project over a decade after first stepping in the arena.
Yeah, I was going to say not 10 years in, maybe a second or third album, but not 10 plus years into the game.
Yeah, and I wonder if... I wonder if that's connected to a level of hunger that's still there because you haven't reached like your apex yet or like your peak mm-hmm. or whatever. Because, you know, Gibbs is still doing well financially, obviously. Like he's been making money independently for a long time. So Gibbs is an example. It's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough because, I mean, you have access to so much now. I feel like, you know, I've been going back and forth on the idea of the underground for almost 10 years now and like trying to figure out like, okay, is the underground still a thing? Can you still call yourself underground when the biggest rappers in the world and the most obscure rappers in the world are now sharing platforms?
Right.
Right? They used to be on the blogs together. Now they're on a streaming service.
Yeah.
There used to be a clear division. Like you guys cannot be... You know, you could probably go back to 2009 and there was like a Drake post right next to fucking a Cool Kids post on our right.
Right.
Like that never happened. Like the Roots did not share real estate with Jay-Z that much. You know, of course they did the Unplugged, whatever, but and yeah. The Roots is probably like a bad example because they were underground, but they were signed to a major label. They were pretty popular, but if you want to go a little bit more underground, like MF Doom and Jay-Z were not sharing the same platform.
There you go. That's a good, right? A good comparison. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's another one. I'll hit you with a couple more. who is the biggest slash most respected artist never to have a crossover hit? And I have two I'll set you up with, because I've had this conversation a few times. And I think my 1-2, and I don't know which order, are Jadakiss and Fab.
Oof.
Because I feel like both of those have come really close.
You said crossover.
Crossover. Okay, so like mainstream.
Let's define crossover first.
Okay. Well, when I look at crossover, it's some form of pop radio or pop culture, or back when MTV had regular rotations. You know, it's getting out of, like, if you're only playing on Hot 97 or Power, I don't know if that's quite a crossover hit yet.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Okay, yeah. so that means we're disregarding the Hot 100, because Fab, I want to say, has a couple of songs that were like top 10 on the Hot 100.
Yeah.
Like So Into You was really big. I mean, this is before I was really in the industry, so I don't remember it, you know, where it played on radio, you know, in terms of pop. But Can't Let You Go was big.
Yeah.
Make Me Better was big. So I think you can make a case for Fab having a crossover record. I don't know if it wasn't Z100.
Right.
But I think you can make a case for Fab. Jadakiss, that's a good one. Why was a big record, but I don't think it crossed over at all.
Yeah, I mean, that was like 2002, maybe? Something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Why Bush Knocked Down the Towers? Like, I'll just, for the rest of my life, that line will be stuck in my head.
Push pounds and powder. Why did Bush knock down the towers? Why you around them cowards? Why Aaliyah have to take that flight?
It might have been 2003 or 4, because it wasn't on the first album.
Yeah. Those are the artists. Yeah. Those are the artists that I'm always cheering for. Like, whether or not I'm still a big fan, it's like,
oh, I got you. Okay. Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah.
Bro, Rick Ross.
Yeah. Oh, Rick, that's a good Ross. One. Yeah.
Rick Ross. And this is the beauty of hip hop, where culture is not measurable in a way. So you can have a song that's the biggest thing in your world, and when you look at the numbers, it doesn't apply to today's climate, because the metrics of things are measured different.
Yeah.
So BMF today would be a bigger song statistically than it was in 2010.
Sure. Hustling right now?
Oh, my God. Right? So I remember towards the end of 2010, I was a XXL at the time, and we were talking about the biggest songs of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, BMF was at the top of the list. Mind you, if you go to Wikipedia or whatever, that song was only like 50-something on the Hot 100.
Sure.
And I don't know if you remember. I mean, I'm sure you do. Rick Ross, between his second album and... No, between Teflon Don and... God Forgives I Don't.
Yeah.
He got so hot.
Yeah.
He got like it just felt like, oh my God, this guy, I'm not gonna say he had a Wayne moment, but this is around the time where he signed Meek and Wale, maybe that MMG was big.
I was gonna say he did the MMG deal with Warner Brothers around that time. Because it was just anyone wanted that Warner signed MMG without Rick Ross, right? It was like, he's so big, we're not even gonna get his albums. We just want everything else he touches.
Yeah. No, he was hot. I mean, think about it. Like, think about how big Meek is now. Like, he signed to Ross.
Yeah.
But I remember at the time, and we waited for it because he was hot with the mixtapes, and then we were waiting for the album. We got a delay, and then he hit us with Rich Forever, the mixtape.
Yep.
And it was so fire. Like, everyone was excited. Like, that's for me as a fan, those are always like some of the most exciting times in the culture, when somebody, whether they're new or established, have this moment where everyone recognizes, like, oh, something's happening here. Like, Future in 2015.
Right.
When he heated up and he was like, and everybody's just like, oh my God, this guy's hot. But, you know, Rick Ross also tried. He made attempts at crossover records, but never, it never worked.
Yeah.
Like Aston Martin Music, that song with Usher. So every time he tried to go for it, it never worked. So Rick Ross is a good one.
Wow. Yeah, that is a really good one.
Rick Ross, yo, if you look at the numbers with Ross, he never even came close.
Yeah.
And I say this respectfully because, you know, legendary, obviously.
Of course.
But obviously, like, he's a very important figure.
Talking about moments, I don't know how to explain this, but I'm gonna try my best and see if you go with me on this. So when I remember you and I used to talk about records that were breaking on Vine. And, and now it's all the way where everything breaks on TikTok. And like you said earlier, everything's a challenge and whatever. You had OG Mako. Wasn't that the You Guessed It record?
Yep.
And so that was one of the first records I heard that if you looked at like the BPM of it, it was probably like 60 or something. That's a traditionally slow record, right? Or slow sounding record.
Bitch, you guessed it. Still in that place. And a flex. Bitch, you guessed it. I'm still.
And people were losing their minds to that song, right?
Yeah.
And then White Iverson came out. And this, I remember seeing post at one of those, I don't even know what it was, but some like outdoor LA. It wasn't an Odd Future Carnival, but something like that. I don't even remember what it was. But he did White Iverson, again, a traditionally like slow sounding record. But kids were like almost like moshing double time to what the sound of the record was.
White Iverson, when I started balling, I was young. You gon' think about me when I'm gone. I need that money like the ring I never won.
Do you remember when that wave kind of happened? Do you understand what I'm talking about? It seemed like all of a sudden slow hip hop was like kids were losing their mind to it.
I know what you're talking about. And my explanation for it is drugs.
Perfect.
Like
perfect, like, answer.
Like, so I've been thinking about this for a while, and I always isolated that conversation to the climate. Like that time period.
Yeah.
I was always like, man, there isn't that many up-tempo records.
Yeah.
Like, I remember talking to people and being like, yo, you come up with, like, a up-tempo, like, banger, you're going to be stuck on fucking workout playlists forever because, like, there's not that many new ones that come out. There's a lot of mid, you know, something like Bad and Bougie or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, you'll be in the club bumping to something that's not fast or energetic necessarily. There's an energy to it, but it's not like that head nod, like that hard hitting. It's just something completely different.
Yeah.
But shout out to Sycamore, because I remember talking to him and he kind of broke down how the tempo and the sound was always connected to drugs, the drug of choice throughout the eras. I'm not gonna even try to attempt to repeat it the way he did.
Yeah.
But I remember he was like, yo, cocaine, it was fast. And then the weed, it was kind of like, you know, and I was like, oh my God. But think about it. Everything is downers now.
Yeah.
Everybody's on pills. Like the music right now sounds like what these kids are on.
Wow. So that's exactly what it is. That's a great answer.
Right. So, well, I want all of them to get off drugs, period.
Of course.
Clearly.
Of course.
I mean, we all know this, right? Like, it was interesting when Juice WRLD died, you know, a lot of the conversation that I heard was people were like, oh, these kids on drugs, these kids on drugs. Like, bro, people been on drugs forever. Let's not isolate it to this current generation.
Right.
Now, it's a little bit alarming, like, the types of drugs they're doing and how they consume them. Like, that seems to be an issue, but I don't know that that's something that you're going to solve. Like, the drugs ain't going nowhere.
Yeah.
So, but think about it. Like, you're talking about songs that are, like, 6 years old already.
That's crazy.
Right? 5 or 6 years old.
That's so crazy.
So where is it going next?
Yeah.
Like, the sound has to change at some point. I don't know when, but it does. It just has to.
It will. I mean, that's the beauty of that art form, is that it constantly evolves, you know?
Yeah.
Not to always, but, you know, if you listen to rock radio right now, it doesn't sound all that different from, I was at K-Rock from 2005 to 2011. And if you turned it on right now, it pretty much sound the same. No disrespect, but it kind of.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, you get one-off bands that kind of like have a different sound. Like, I don't know if you remember, but when all those, like when Mumford and Sons and Lumineers and all those bands that had like folk sound, then there was a yep. few bands that sounded like that. And then you had like Vampire Weekend and like the dancey rock, quote unquote, bands. But for the most part, you know, it's a couple dudes with guitars making rock music. And I think the same for country. I mean, there are country records out right now that if you released in 2007 would be like, yeah, this is what pop country sounds like. But I think you're lucky enough to work in an art form that's constantly evolving and constantly moving. And you've got, you know, young kids making this music in their bedroom. That's only going to produce something new and exciting. And maybe I don't get it because I'm old now, but that's okay. It's not for me. So I'm okay with that. That's fair. All right. Last question, and then I'll let you go. Is it easier or harder now if I'm a young artist trying to break? Because, you know, people like to always say, well, you can post a song on the internet and you put it on SoundCloud and it blows up and then you get a deal and now you're a huge artist, right? So the access potentially is there, and the gatekeepers maybe aren't as important as they used to be, but there's a lot more.
Yeah, I don't think there's one fair answer. I think when I hear people answer that question, I think a lot of there's a generational bias. Of course, like, the 88 guys, you know, they're going to say it was much harder in their era. They had to pay dues.
Yeah.
They had to meet a certain standard. There were more qualifications. Like, you had to fit into more of a tight box.
Yeah.
Actually, I want to clean that up, because the beauty of that time was that there wasn't a box per se. It was a lot of diversity. But I mean, a box meaning that, you know, a checklist, I guess, is a better way to frame it.
Sure.
There weren't nearly as many artists then. People keep talking about gatekeepers. The reality is, like, now, if you're an artist and you are truly a vision and you can amass, like, a following, you don't need anyone but fans. There's no one. Like, you can't get blackballed now the same way they used to back then.
Sure.
Because guess what? All right, this company doesn't want to mess with me, then I'm going to go direct to the fans. They love me. Like, amass, like, a massive following, and it's on. I want to say it's easier in some ways, just obviously, like, because you don't have the same level of requirements. You know, equipment is cheaper. It's mm-hmm. easy. Like, you know, all these guys used to have to pay for studio time. Now you could probably, like, in your bedroom, to your earlier point, like, make something that sounds clean enough. Like, and, you know, you can afford it. Like, people used to save up to go in the studio.
Yeah, you don't have to do that anymore. Like,
you don't. Yeah. So in some ways it's easier, but in some ways it's harder, because how do you cut through with so many artists out there?
Yeah.
So I don't think there's a yes or no answer. I think it's easier in some ways and it's harder in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the same for every genre. I don't know what I would do right now if I was a 15-year-old trying to make it as an artist. Like, it's insane, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you think it's the same for other genres, though? Like, you think that, is there more volume? I mean, there can't be the same volume in rock. right?
No, there's definitely not more volume, but I think the argument of access and putting songs out online and making music in your house is across every genre. So, right. I think the days of, same thing. I mean, I remember, friends' bands, this was mid-90s when I was down in San Diego, and it was like, I have a friend's band who they had their first CD had 19 songs on it, and the joke was they recorded it in 19 hours. They spent an hour on each song because that's all they could afford in the studio, right?
Wow.
So, like, I don't think that happens anymore, right? I think you can make music in your house and get it out, and then some luck obviously has to play a part, but the idea of sending demos to an A&R guy at a mythical record label in Los Angeles, praying that they, randomly picked out your yellow envelope. I think those days are done for rock bands. I don't think that's your only journey to success. But the volume, no, I don't think anyone compares with the volume of hip hop. Like it's unmatched. It's insane. I don't know how you keep track, dude. It's crazy.
Yeah, I know this is your show, but I got a question for you.
I'll take it.
And I don't know. We might have talked about this before, but. I'll try my best to explain it as clearly as possible, but I think there's a way, in my opinion, to create music listener or music fan archetypes and have some of their traits be the genres they listen to and follow that listener through time. And for example, right, if you have in the 70s, a music fans who listens to Rolling Stone, Black Sabbath, Led Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. In the 80s, that fan is going to listen to Def Leppard, Metallica, Guns N' Roses. In the 90s, they listen to grunge. Yep. In the 2000s, they listen to, I don't know, Linkin Park, whatever. And, yeah. And please forgive me, Rick's rock listeners. I'm not an expert on that side.
No, those are all, well done. Those are all pretty good examples.
Right? Okay. Yeah. This is my confusion with rock being quote unquote dead. Where are those fans now? Are they just listening to hip hop? Because if so for hip hop, it's okay. The people who listen to 70s soul, disco, some of those become modern R&B fans in the 80s and they start listening to hip hop. In the 90s, it's hip hop and R&B and so on and so on. But my thing is, where are the kids that listen to fucking Smashing Pumpkins and Nirvana and Green Day in the 90s? And it's not a perfect breakdown because you can go back and forth, right? Like, I grew up in the 90s, like MTV kid. So
yeah,
hip-hop and R&B was my shit, but I have an appreciation for grunge as well. I'm not an expert, but that shit was dope.
Yeah.
So it's not like a perfect breakdown, but now if there's this conversation about rock not being as impactful or like as fruitful as it once was, where is that? What is that fan listening to now? Where are they? Are they just jumping in other areas because there's nothing? Or are they going back to older rock?
I would say, I have a couple thoughts. One, I would say if you listen to, and I just use K-Rock as an example because they're the rock station in LA, or Alt 98.7 or whatever it's called. Those two stations still play a majority of music from the 90s and early 2000s. So if you click over, if you're just a 13-year-old kid and you're like, my dad listened to the Rolling Stones or what, a Green Day or whatever, and you flip over to a radio station in the second biggest media market in the world, you're going to hear songs that are 20 plus years old. They'll play Sublime and Red Hot Chili Peppers and Green Day and Nirvana. And then maybe they'll throw in, Mumford and Sons or some newer band. I don't know. So I think that the exposure to new rock bands doesn't exist like it used to. For example, you and I remember, and you just referenced sitting and looking at MTV, you couldn't go to YouTube and just type in a music video you wanted to see. I would sit and watch MTV and I would sit through Backstreet Boys I would sit through New Kids on the Block because I'd want to see Guns N' Roses, or I would sit through Def Leppard because I wanted to see Nothing But a G Thing when that video came out. You know, it's like that. You were kind of forced fed several different genres. I think now everything is very siloed, and there isn't a giant place that is serving you newish sounding rock music, right? So that's number one. I think number two is, and you kind of touched on it, I don't think kids are as excited about rock music as they are other genres. I don't think they see rock stars anymore. Like when I first saw Guns N' Roses, I was scared. I was like, I remember I saw NWA and I was scared of Compton, and I saw Guns N' Roses and I was scared of the Sunset Strip, because it was just like, these worlds are I'm infatuated with and going to love for the rest of my life and also be a little bit scared, right? Rock stars, rock star mentality. That doesn't really happen anymore in those worlds. So what do you see? You see Diplo. You see him playing in front of 200,000 people. And you're like, God, all I need is a computer and I can start making this music. I don't have to learn a guitar. That's hard. I don't have to learn a piano. I can just kind of make it feel like a video game and I have GarageBand or whatever. And so I can make that music. And I think similarly, you know, you can work on making a beat and recording lyrics in your bedroom. I think the accessibility has just changed what kids are drawn to now, you know, and you see, I mean, Drake is a rock star. Drake is the biggest rock star we have. You know what I mean?
Real shit.
If that's what I'm seeing on Spotify, on YouTube, on any pop culture website, if those are my rock stars, if that's a path, that's a little more exciting than Vampire Weekend or some, you know, kind of cool, weird Brooklyn rock band. I think it's like, I don't know if this is the right term, but almost like the sexiness of it is gone. It's like, it's not it's not quite as appetizing to like sit in your room for a long, long time figuring out how to play guitar and then writing a song. And then what do you have to do? You have to go down the street and find three other guys and start a band in a garage? That's crazy. Who would do that right now? You know what I mean? So I think it's a factor of all that, but I think it's true. I don't think rock is dead. I think you have to look for it a little bit harder. I think people that aged out, you know, they still, classic rock radio stations are still big because people go like, you know what, I'm just going to listen to Tom Petty again, and that's fine. You know, they're not, the culture almost of rock music isn't trying to be what's next and isn't trying to be first on something where that's a core value, I think, in hip hop.
Yeah. And the Nielsen report that came out in 2017, when they said that hip hop was number one for the first time in the US in terms of consumption, it surpassed the rock, which means rock, amid all that talk about rock is dead, was the number one genre.
Yeah.
It's just classic rock, most likely.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, it's just not a it's not an evolving thing, I don't think. At least not as quickly as dance music, EDM and hip hop. It's just, maybe we're just stuck in our ways.
Well, you know what? I don't know. How fast evolving is EDM now?
Yeah, that's true.
EDM was on fire right before the streaming boom. It was like, it was so hot. It was like, wait, these guys feel like they might be the next big genre. Like, for real, for real.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened.
I also don't know how much of fan loyalty there is in that world. I feel like, remember when Skrillex came out and he was like, I mean, dubstep was like the biggest thing in the world for a few months. And then it was just kind of like, all right, he went off and produced some stuff for other people and that's it. And, you know, Diplo and those guys, and even Chainsmokers, I guess they're a pop group now, but you know, I don't know how much loyalty that genre drives. I think it's like, I like these songs. I like, it's a very live experience. If you're into drugs, it's perfect for you. So I get it, but I don't know if you're going to leave loyal to an artist where I think you are in other genres.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. That's a fair point.
All right, Carl. Well, thanks for making the time. I hope someday when all this blows over, we could sit down and do it in person. I think that'd be fun.
All right, let's do it. I'm down.
So we got the Rap Pack. It's on Spotify. It's a podcast. You should listen to it. It's great. And then, I don't know, are you the head of urban music for Spotify?
Yes, sir. Head of urban music, creative director for Spotify.
So go to Spotify and just stream the Rap Caviar playlist over and over and over, right? Is that the fair plug?
Yes. over and over and over. Stream the Rag Pack. New episode coming soon.
Thanks, Carl. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, good talking, man.
Yeah, you too. I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for having me.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
This is the Rick Savage Show.